Hi, my name is Kimberly Cook. I am the assistant director at the Hendricks Center. And if you are like probably 75% of the people on campus, you don't know what the Hendricks Center is. And so we're over all the way by Washington Hall. We are the leadership center here at DTS. And we were founded by Howard Hendricks. Hopefully you know that name. I've read a book or two. In 1986 to focus on Christian leadership. And then it became evident around the 2010-ish that cultural engagement really needed to be added as a part of what it takes to equip leaders, Christian leaders, in today's culture. And so that was added with Daryl Bach in 2011. And these CE chapels were started for the center to be able to just reach out to our campus community and talk about specific issues that wrap around the curriculum, a lot like what they were saying with Dr. Kreider and Dr. Thacker, talking about things that aren't necessarily talked about in the classroom, or at least more of the practical implications and the practical outworking of our biblical and theological studies. So that's who we are at the Hendricks Center. Some of the issues that we talk about regularly and have programs to address are helping pastors and ministry leaders who have been in ministry, who are facing burnout and seasons of change. We do that with our LEAD program. It's a 5-day intensive program that really is quite transformative for ministry leaders. If you know somebody, or if you have been in ministry and you kind of feel like you're at a crossroads, we would love to chat with you, because it's really a life-changing experience. We also help future leaders see what it takes to run and be a part of a content-driven ministry, and how to engage the world in a winsome manner. So if you need an internship and anything that I'm saying resonates in your heart with what you're wanting to do with ministry, we would love to chat with you about that as well. We have several types of internships available, and we are super customizable. So if you're interested, we'll figure out how to make an internship work for you. And then one of the other major areas that we work in is giftedness. And that is actually our topic for today's chapel. It feels very weird for me to have been talking about Howard Hendricks, because we have two of his children sitting here. And they have actually committed most of their lives, or a large portion of their lives, to talking about giftedness and giftedness discovery. And so as a center, we work on helping you and helping the campus, essentially with career and calling, vocational questions. What do I do with my life? Why am I here? What's my purpose? What does the Lord have for me? We help you sort through those things. We're actually working to integrate that in a lot more areas on campus. But for the time being, we actually have a discovery workshop coming up next weekend. So if you're interested, we would love to help you and to coach you through kind of that process of figuring out what's going on and what might be next for you. But we are talking about giftedness today in our chapel, and there's nobody better to talk to us than these two. So I'm going to introduce them. And for the record, we did not coordinate the green, but it's looking good, isn't it? Yeah. So first we have Bev Godby is a senior associate at the Giftedness Center. She specializes in college students, young adults, and women in various kinds of life transitions. She holds a degree from Wheaton and from UTD. She's a former educator and audiologist, and I love this, and is particularly attuned, do you get it, audiologist, to how the giftedness of her clients expresses itself in the whole of their life narrative and their relationships. She's also a mother of 3 grown daughters and is married to Dr. Dale Godby, who is a clinical psychologist. So thank you so much for being here, Bev.
Thank
it's a wonderful
me.
Honor to have you here, especially like Hendricks Center. Hendricks is great. You weren't Hendricks, it's Godby now. I get that. Okay. Bill is my boss. And
he's my boss.
He serves as the executive director for Christian leadership at the Hendricks Center. And in addition to that role, he is the president of the Giftedness Center, which grew out of a consulting practice he founded in 1985. For the last 30 years, he's been helping people make critical life and career decisions based on their giftedness. He holds degrees from Harvard University, Boston University, and is also a DTS alum. He's authored or co-authored over 22 books, including The Person Called You. Here, are you ready for like the biggest sell? The Person Called You, Why You're Here, Why You Matter, and What You Should Do With Your Life. And most recently, he and Bev released a work entitled, So How Do I Parent This Child?, where they apply giftedness principles to parenting. In addition to the practice and at the Giftedness Center, Bill is the proud father of three grown daughters by his late wife, Nancy, and is married to Lynn Turpin Hendricks. Thank you so much for joining us today. So to start off, actually getting to the giftedness conversation, I've used that word 5,000 times, but what is it? What do we mean when we say it? What is giftedness as you guys are talking about it? And because there's lots of types of giftednesses out there that our culture recognizes. So what are we talking about when we say giftedness?
Bill? Yeah, giftedness has kind of become a buzzword recently. And having studied it for most of my career, the more I hear people talk about it, you know, it's like the word love. Everybody uses it, but nobody really quite exactly knows what it means. And so it is with giftedness. But the simplest way to understand giftedness is it's what you're born to do. Like everybody's born to do something. For one person, they want to solve a problem. Never met a problem they didn't want to solve. Somebody else, they want to get a result, get a finished product of some sort. Somebody else, they want to understand something at a very deep level. Somebody else, they want to get people to respond to them and influence their behavior. Everybody has some form of giftedness, and in fact, everybody has their own unique form of giftedness. But giftedness is not, you know, the spectacular, you know, we think of the gifted athlete, the gifted musician. Certainly there are people who are, in that sense, quite talented and at the top of their game, but every single human being has been designed by God, and when you press in to try to discover that design, you find this phenomenon, what we call people's giftedness, and it's really part and parcel of their personhood. It's how they do life.
So, Bev, is this like another type of inventory like DISC or Myers-Briggs? Is it kind of like, all right, you know, because there's some people who get really into that.
Absolutely.
And so they're like, oh, I love this. So is that what we're talking about?
We're swimming in the same waters as all of those inventories. Those are usually gotten by self-report, which is basically you tell them what you like, what you're good at, what you prefer. And then they group you, they type you, they kind of say you're like this group or that group. A very popular one right now, especially with Christians, is Enneagram. So you'll, if you've taken that, and a lot of people, there is this driving need to know how I'm like other people. I think that's driven from we being created in kind. But there's a danger there, which is you're not a number. And even when you read the type that you come down to, it sounds a lot like you, but then maybe not completely. But people get rabid about this. I have no issue with that if people want to do that. But what giftedness, what we're really looking at, is something that maybe people are not totally aware of. Bill called it a phenomenon, and the truth is, it's true and operational in you whether you're aware of it or not. The beautiful thing about the way we collect our information is not asking you to tell us what you know about yourself, but rather to tell us stories. We use storytelling to collect the truth about people. What I love about storytelling is it reveals the person for who they are. So we live inside our skin. We have our own understanding of who we are. And it's encounter with another that we really get the chance to see ourselves with a little more objectivity and collect that. That could be for good or for bad. Sometimes the thing that people are actually gifted at has been shamed along the way, or scribbled on, as I like to say. And so they may have difficulty even claiming that. But I'm asking for people to tell me their best stories. So I feel like I have the best job. Bill and I feel we have the best job in the world, because I get to hear you tell your story, and that's exactly what I need. Even if you exaggerated a little bit or thought it was a little better than it was at the time, that actually is exactly going to absolutely reveal you for who you are. So you can't make it up, and you can't sort of make me think you're something that you're not. This is who you be. This is who you have been made by the maker to be.
Yes.
Just to put one little sort of caveat. Some people, when they hear, I'm going to tell stories and they're going to, quote, find out who I am, that sounds a little scary. Because, you know, if they really found out who I am, they wouldn't like me. That's how a lot of people feel. We're going to find out the best of you. That's what we're interested in. And I make a distinction for humans. We all have what I call the bad truth about us. You know, we have our sins, we have our weaknesses, we have our failures, our train wrecks, our dysfunctions, our pathologies. We go on and on and on all day. And there's no question about it. We're messed up as humans, right? We're fallen. Like, we need a savior. Like, let's just agree on that. Most people, that's where they live. That's what they think about themselves most of the time, is their terribleness. They've never considered that there's actually a good truth about who they are. And that's where the giftedness resides. God made you in his image. That's a beautiful thing. And what we're trying to do is to discover, well, what is that for you?
So what I'm hearing is that some of the other inventories are more based on finding out how you are like other people, whereas giftedness, we're talking about specifically what makes you individually unique. Would that be? Okay. So if we get to that, and when we hear the word gifts, and when we're in biblical and theological circles, automatically we think spiritual gifts, right? Is it spiritual gifts?
The short answer to the question, well, what's the difference between giftedness and spiritual gifts? The short answer is we're talking about the same thing, okay? The longer answer is that we need to go back and do a whole lot more thinking about what we mean by spiritual gifts. Because a lot of what we're working with there, we've received a sort of tradition. But when we press into that tradition to say, well, where does the Bible actually teach that? Things start to get fairly murky. I mean, just take, you know, how many spiritual gifts are there? Well, there's four lists in the New Testament. The problem is none of them agree. Some have two, some have 14 or whatever. So, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's somewhere between like 16 and 19 or 22 spiritual gifts. The fact that the lists don't agree should make it obvious, it seems to me, that nobody's trying to come up with an exhaustive list. They're all suggestive. It's like in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul's saying, you know, we got a lot of gifted people in this church. We got some people that are administrators. We got some teachers. We got some prophets. We got a whole category of people. They just like to help. But even if there is such a thing as a limited number of spiritual gifts, and we say, well, you have the gift of administration, we still have to look inside you to figure out, how do you uniquely do that gift of administration? So there's a lot more we could say about that. We're basically talking about what God has given us. Some people say, well, there's natural gifts, there's spiritual gifts. Okay, if that's how you want to look at it, go for it. All I know is this. All that we have, we've been given. All that we are is his grace. And so any endowment you have, anything you're capable of doing, whether it's natural, spiritual, whatever, it's there because God gave it to you.
And it's a good thing to be reminded, too, that when you hear, let's say, 8 stories, that's what I usually get from an individual, there's a pattern that shows up. How they do it is identical every single time. And they're not aware that they're telling me most often, any kind of pattern. Sometimes they'll get to what was satisfying about that, and they'll go, well, it's kind of like the last story. It's a pattern. So you, first of all, can't make up eight stories that have a pattern like that. So that tells us what we're looking at is something in the person that does not change. If it doesn't change, I feel like it has to be something of God. Everything else about us does change, but this is something that is stable, repeatable. And what we also find is when they do that thing, they get an incredible sense of joy and satisfaction. And I go back to the creation, and I believe that God made us like himself, but he got great pleasure from that. And when we do this thing we do, that we've been put here in this space and time to do, we get this tremendous sense of satisfaction. I believe that's from God.
Wow, we ought to make a movie out of that.
So I just want to mention real quick, because even, you know, what we're talking about is, to a degree, a certain interpretation of the spiritual gift texts and that kind of thing. And we're in a crew that often likes to think through interpretation, that kind of thing. So if you have any questions or you want to dig further in that or anything else that we're talking about, please do text in the questions. In a second, I'm going to turn on my phone. I'm not checking out. I'm actually getting the questions. And we'll get to that in just a couple minutes. So as we're talking, if something comes up, feel free to text in. Okay, so Bev, you actually just started talking about what it is, like how exactly do we find our giftedness? Okay, so we all look at this and we say, okay, well, we'll grant you that there's this phenomenon of some kind of unique individual gifting. And, you know, we'll think through the theological implications of that. But we'll say, okay, for the record, like it's there. How do I figure it out for myself? What does that look like? So you said it's listening to stories and right. then finding a pattern?
That's how we do our work. Some people, my dad's a great example. He always knew he should be a teacher, and he followed that energy, and good things happened. But not everybody's giftedness speaks quite that loudly. And so I think it's really helpful to find a person to help you in that kind of exploration, that journey, that discovery process. One of the reasons that I love, Kim mentioned that I tend to work with either young adults or women who have gone through a hard passage and feel like they've kind of lost their sense of worth in some way or in a major way. And the reason I think that I'm drawn to both of those is because of everyone that I can think of that really needs to hear the good truth about themselves and that they are more than whatever has been said about them or whatever they've experienced, it's that group. A young person kind of coming into adulting, trying to make all these decisions, and I have a lot of them who are very confused. Maybe they had parents that gave them a script all the way along and now they're in a place where they have to make it up. And they're just not sure. They have no confidence of who they are. They know who their parents are, who the parents said they were. Maybe even they did well in school. And let's face it, we live in a whole culture that's about comparison and competition. Even if you stack up well in that, you may find yourself in a place of, I don't know if this is what I love to do at all. This doesn't even feel like me. I actually had a kid who graduated from Princeton Law School, came to me after getting, you know, chosen by a major law firm and said, if I just know one thing, it's I don't want to do law. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really kind of sad time to figure that out. But I loved it. You know, it's like now we can figure out what he is here to do. And oftentimes, and I say women that are in those hard transitions because women are very identified by their role in life. And when that changes or is threatened, somebody said to you, I don't want to be married to you anymore. You've lost a child, maybe in reality, or the child went off to college and doesn't want to be, you don't feel like a mom anymore. Those are critical times when boring down and reminding that person of what is true about them, going back, listening to the stories. The Israelites always did that when they got lost. They looked back at where did God show up for them again and again. So it's a very powerful kind of instrument.
So as I'm hearing you talk, I feel like I could hear somebody thinking that, like, this sounds like almost like a luxury. You know, like, okay, that's great if you are in a society and in an economic state where you can sit around and reflect on what your purpose is, but I have to go to work because I have to feed my family, or, you know, somewhere else in the world, you know, we're subsistence farmers. This is what we do. So how do we think through giftedness when, like, one, is it a luxury? And two, if it's not, then what does it look like when somebody can't really reflect on it or at least act on it or, you know, do anything about it, vocationally speaking?
Well, giftedness is not a luxury. Giftedness is a reality. It's the way God designed people. So let's take the extreme case, the rice farmer in North Korea who's a virtual slave. That person has every bit as much giftedness as anybody here in our culture, including anybody in Silicon Valley. They have giftedness in spades. What they lack is opportunity. They don't have the opportunity, first of all, to really discover it in a robust way, but even if they did, to exercise it in a free way. This is why the people who wrote our Declaration of Independence in the United States put three inalienable rights in there: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what they meant by happiness was not, you know, what we think about, like pleasure and fun and partying. They meant happiness in the sense that each of us would be free to pursue the path that we believe that God had put us here for, which gets into the giftedness and the calling space. And that's why I'm so passionate to see around the world people not only wake up to their giftedness, but also have the freedom, which includes justice and laws and property rights and so forth, but the freedom to then exercise that giftedness in ways. And the proof of this concept that I'm giving is really the micro-lending phenomenon, you know, where somebody's just, they're starving in poverty somewhere, and because they don't have any means of earning a living. And so somebody lends them $50 to, you know, buy a bike so they can get their bananas to the village and sell them. And next thing you know, there's all this flourishing takes place. You know, two women loan $100 and they get a sewing machine, and next thing you know, they got a cottage industry, and their gifts are expressing themselves entrepreneurially, and there's a flourishing that's taking place. And so wherever giftedness is allowed to exercise itself, human flourishing takes place. And this is right out of Genesis 1, where the very first words that God says to his new human creatures amounts to their marching orders, their mission in life. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, rule over it. Make the world fruitful. The world on its own is not very fruitful. It just gives us raw resources. Only human beings can add value to the world's resources that cause the world and its people to flourish. And to each and every human being, God has given some means of adding that value. That's what we call their giftedness. So everybody has giftedness. It's not just a luxury. And I actually believe that it's extremely important for people, the further you go down the food chain, to wake up to their giftedness, not only because of the productivity side of it, but because of the worth side of it. You know that 65% of the world's people are what we call orality people. They don't read, or they can't read, or they won't read. They learn orally. And you can imagine that if you don't read in a world that values things through money, you're down at the bottom of the chain, right? The food chain. And you feel worthless. To be able to say to such a person, oh no, it's really true. There really is a God, and he's a person. And he's made you as a person because he wants to have a relationship with you. And in fact, he's given you a means to contribute to the world and cause it to flourish. The first thing that person's going to feel is like, wow, I'm worth something. I'd never seen that before. That's life-changing.
So it seems like there's significant ministry potential, right? And so we're a seminary, and we're in a room full of seminary students, like hopefully in or looking toward ministry or thinking about, you know, how to use their whatever vocation they're in for the kingdom. And so it's a, so giftedness has a service element, even a potentially a missional element to it. What else does it offer ministry, and what should seminary students know about this tool, essentially, that might help them as they go forward? Bev?
I think it has infinite application to our lives. When I think about giftedness, one of my daughters once said to me, "Mom, is everything about giftedness?" And I said, "Pretty much, you know, because I talked about it a lot." But it applies to literally any question you want to give it. What is next for me? That was a question that Kim said a lot of people are looking toward, and the truth is that never, ever goes away. That question just keeps repeating. Every season of life, you have to kind of keep leaning into it and figuring it out. But people at the seminary are asking, what's God asking me to do in terms of ministry? And I think that this is a wonderful way for you to go back to who did God make you to be. I will say that giftedness is not prescriptive, so it will not tell you at the end you absolutely need to be a senior pastor or not that. It is suggestive of things that really will fit you well. It gives you a lot of information about the context. But this is something that I remember my dad saying years ago that the seminary did not have, and he had a lot of, he himself knew this because he was a senior pastor and found this is not a fit at all. And did it for a while, and I'm sure the people, you know, got something from it, but he was not in a place where he was designed to operate well. So I think that was instructive, but that's part of an answer. Do you have anything else you want to add to that?
No.
Oh, good.
Really? Nothing? It's just infinite? It seems also that it can contribute to like understanding each other. Like, so a lot of ministry is working on teams, right?
Absolutely.
And so like having the ability to say, oh, you know, you function best as a person who works individually and on their own. And I'm a person who works best when I am surrounded by people all the time. We're going to need to know that about each other,
right?
Because otherwise we're going to drive each other insane, you know, like, and these kinds of things, even for teams, help build an overall understanding of one another.
Well, exactly. Because it helps you when you have an awareness of giftedness, you realize first people are different from me. I don't know if that's a new thought for you, but what I discover is that when we help somebody wake up to their giftedness, often one of the first reactions is, well, that's no big deal. I mean, everybody does life this way, right? No, actually not. It's like new news for them that other people actually do life differently. And they really do. And so to be aware of that, now you start looking for, well, how do you do life differently? How do you do life differently? And you see that not as a negative, but as a positive. Because another thing that humans do is that when somebody does life differently than we do it, you know, like your spouse or your child or your parents or your professor or your coworker, they go about making decisions differently. They go about a task differently. They get interested in things much differently. It's almost human nature when we see that to go, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing it that way? Well, of course, the answer is, Bill, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just not you. Giftedness gives you a lens to see the person and honor the way God's made them and not shame them and not say there's something wrong with them. In fact, to celebrate it. And now, you're still going to have to negotiate, you know, conflicts and differences, but at least you've got a different language and lens through which to do that.
And you're changing also your emphasis to what's wrong with them to what's right with them. I oftentimes see couples, and I'll put both of them through it, and then we do a side-by-side where we look at the areas. This is not psychology, by the way, but we look at areas of relative complement, where you guys just going to really fit together, and where are the areas of relative challenge, meaning you're going to have to negotiate. You're going to have to, like, recognize this person is wired this way. That's a different thing than she's trying to be annoying or he's so awful this way. It's about thinking that's what he instinctively naturally does. Now, of course, there's another thing we haven't even talked about, which is managing the giftedness. And one of the reasons that we love to do this work is to help the person see, hey, this is operational, whether you get it or not. You're understanding it, how it works, and the dark side of that gift, meaning if you don't manage it, you're going to end up not in a great place. And they probably already know that because they've landed there a few times. But it's about helping them to basically do what Moses told the people, which was choose life. Choose something life-giving. How do you do that? Well, how do you do that is written into this inscription. Of promise, also belonging by God.
Well, and what a powerful gift for those of us who have kiddos. What a powerful gift to offer children.
Absolutely.
Right? Because
yes.
Then you potentially, as a, you know, important person in a child's life, whether it's biological or not, you are able to look at the child and not just say, this is what's wrong with you. I need to help you with what's wrong with you so that you can get on in society. But really, like, hey, this is what is right with you. How can we foster this? How can we, you know?
How can we celebrate it? Even when they're not doing what we ask them to do, what are they doing? What does that mean? We try to teach parents in this book about just observing the gift, because when they're young, they can't talk about what's satisfying to them, but you can watch them in action and know what those things are. So,
So I'm going to turn to questions because we've got a ton. I think it's interesting. I am cracking up at some of these questions because I can tell that we're in the middle of a semester right before break, because there's like three or four that involve burnout. And so you can tell everybody's tired. but there are several questions about concerns about if you have multiple gifts or managing your gift. So one question is, what do you think a person with multiple gifts should do to keep up with all of their gifts without falling into burnout? Another one says, what do you think, that's a repetition. Okay, so maybe not all of you are burnt out. but what would you guys there are a couple of people here who are asking questions about, okay, so I'm hearing that there's these things that I'm gifted at that I'm supposed to be doing. And so what do I do? And do I just keep doing that until, you know, I shine brightly and then just die like a star? You know, how do you guys suggest, like, thinking through those kinds of questions?
Well, let me just put a clarification on there. The question is asked, what if I have multiple gifts, which it kind of assumes, like, oh, there's lots of gifts and some people have lots and some people have few, you know, like Howard Gardner's seven intelligences or something. It doesn't really work that way. Each of us has some form of giftedness, our own unique form of giftedness. It may express itself in multiple ways, but it's not like you have different gifts. You have one core process. Think of it as a process. By the way, the giftedness is not in the activity. You say, oh, my gift is to be a preacher. No. You have some form of giftedness that really seems to thrive through preaching, but that giftedness can thrive in any number of other ways of expression. Giftedness is not in the activity, it's in you. It's your core process. So the person who says, well, I got multiple gifts, what I hear there is, well, you're probably a high octane person with a lot of energy, and you're in a context where, oh, I can express it here, and I can express this gift here, and I can express this gift here. And through that process, you've gotten into a condition that we call oversubscribed. It's something that I myself struggle with, okay? And Bev talked about managing the gift, which gets back to managing your energy, which giftedness is energy. And it really gets into the theological category of Sabbathing. God did not make us to exercise the gift 24/7, 365. We can't not be who we are, but sometimes, and you know, the Old Testament, they say, well, how about, you know, on the seventh day do it? Still working out what it means to Sabbath in a knowledge economy, but that's a whole nother conversation. But still, we have to air the gift out. We have to not exercise the gift at some point. We have to say, no, I'm not going to, like in my case, my core process, I guess a simple way to say it, I love to impact people, in case you hadn't guessed. I like to make a big difference. I like to change the course of you know, where somebody's going. And the giftedness piece gives me a big baseball bat to knock the ball out of the park, okay? But there's times when I got to go, hey, Bill, no more impact today. You've kind of done enough, and you're kind of worn out. And I learned this, by the way, from my dad, who would go out and impact the daylights out of people and churches and leaders and students, and then get off that plane on, I don't know, Sunday night, Monday night, and come home, and we'd watch him crash, you know. Because there is a need for anybody's gift to find a place to rest.
I think, too, that we're, in our culture, in love with the word busy. And I think of it as a four-letter word that really can just destroy your joy in doing anything. We're not really created to be just doing machines that keep out there, and that more of it is better. If this little bit is good, then let's just do it more. I feel like that to take time to do self-care, to pay attention, is really what we're called to do, because then we're better actually at being this. And to remind ourselves that, you know, God doesn't need any of our doing, any of our busyness. He needs us to be present, to be, you know, aware and glorifying Him. And so listening takes time of rest, usually time out.
Well, and Bill, I've heard you say before that, I think this is an important element of this conversation, that it's not though your gift involves the use of abilities, the gift is not what you're doing, which is what you just said. Like, it's you. Like, you are the gift.
Right.
You are the gift to the world. And so it's, and you just being you and who God made you to be is what contributes to the flourishing. And the beautiful part is that if, you know, the Lord has made us this way, then that actually gives you satisfaction. And so you get filled up by just being you. And so if you're doing something that seems like, you know, you're draining and you're worried about burnout and all of that, you might be tired, but you also might not actually be functioning in your gift.
That's
you
a
might
big problem.
Be pouring out too much.
Yeah, so. If you're doing something that doesn't fundamentally fit you, you'll wear yourself out, but it's not because of your giftedness, it's because you're not in the sweet spot of your giftedness. Mm-hmm. You know, think of a screwdriver trying to drive a nail. It will work itself to death, but it's not getting anywhere, but it's also not doing the thing it was designed to do. I see a lot of people in mismatches of what they're doing, putting enormous energy. Well, the Gallup organization says 70% of our workforce is doing work that probably doesn't fit them, and we wonder why people are just burning out right and left. So
there's just to take a little bit of a left turn, there's an interesting question. How do you understand giftedness to function in cultures that are more driven by we than I? So what we're talking about seems like a very individualistic me. One, we need to even talk about, like, is it about my own satisfaction or an actual service? But then how do we navigate the we and the I?
There's really, if we think about how God has made us, He has made us for Himself, but also for one another. So this idea that there's the individuality and then there's the community part and those two are separate, I think is a little bit of a false dichotomy. We are wired individually, uniquely, by God, but it is always for service. It is always for what He has called us to do, what He has put into us. We know from Ephesians 2, 8, 9 that those gifts are that we've been given are for purpose. And really what we have to think about is, are we on purpose? Are we for purpose in every day that we have? And that may not necessarily be doing a job. It may be being you in some other capacity. God has a way of surprising us sometimes. And a person said, when you said that, when you did that, I mean, it changed me. It was so profound. And it's like you were totally unaware of it, but you were living authentically. And so it was able to be used. But that's God's gracious gift. So I think we always need to be thinking about how our gift, how our way of being wired and doing life is fitting in with His flourishing of the world. How are we contributing to that?
Well, and it turns out that so many of the greatest things that human beings accomplish, in fact, are accomplished when gifts are combined together in teams and organizations. I mean, it's a dark story, but that's part of the message of the Tower of Babel. You had all these individuals, all of whom had different forms of gifting, and they all come together, and they start this tower, and God looks down, and He's going, man, if I don't do something, if we don't do something, there's no end of what they could do. See, these gifts are actual power. God has actually handed over power to human beings, not unlimited power, but our gifts actually have agency. They have an effect on the world and its people. And any one individual gift, we get to assess that at our practice at the Giftedness Center. We pop the hood and we look at this giftedness and we're like, oh my gosh, look at what's here, the horsepower. This is amazing. And that's one person. So you get a group of people together, and especially then if you can discover their gifts and align them well and manage them well and organize them well, and they go to work, what do they produce? I mean, they produce things like iPads. I mean, now it's common, you know, but I at the Knox Henderson store up here on the Apple store, I remember the day the iPad came out, there were people camped down the block and around the street to get that thing, and it was an amazing piece of technology. Or 777, when they built that, and here's this massive thing that can take off with all that weight and hang in the air for, I mean, I understand the aerodynamics, but every time I see one, I go, that's a miracle right there. But hundreds of thousands of people contributed to it, their gifts. And so Bev's right. We can't see giftedness as only individual, even though it's housed in individuals. When we combine the gifts collectively, and we're smart about that, amazing things can happen.
And managing the gifts may mean at times that you have the discernment to withhold your gift for the sake of other people using theirs. And that's kind of a later, like, understanding of it. But it really is helpful to think, I'm really good at this, but I don't really know what these other people on my team are good at. Let me put that out there and see. And it may be that sometimes you sit back, and in a way, I think of it as emptying ourselves a little bit. It's kind of like we're called to be Jesus followers, and sometimes that looks like emptying yourself as opposed to, you know, thinking you're shining always. So I think that's a piece as well.
So one final question is, what do you do with someone who doesn't actually believe in their own gift or doesn't value it? You know, they go through the whole giftedness discovery process. They tell their stories. They find a pattern. And they get it. And they're like, okay, well, that's exciting, you know, but I really wanted to be this, you know, or I'm supposed to be this. How do you address disappointment with what God gave you, who God made you to be?
We celebrate the gift. We say, are you kidding me? I have never met anybody and discover their giftedness where I didn't myself find myself in worship. Mm-hmm. I mean, the person themselves, there may be a lot of reasons why at first they're not seeing it. Again, parental expectations factor heavily in that. But to help them begin to see the value of their gift, the joy of their gift, and that brings us to, you know, what do you do with somebody like that? The answer is we put them with what we call a giftedness guide. We don't let them just take a bunch of information and say, be warmed and be filled. We have trained people who know how to celebrate the gift and begin to help you wake up to the significance of what God did when he put you together, and to start to make connections on, here's where this gift could be absolutely vital and invaluable in this context. And it talks so many places about how you learn, how you make decisions, who you need around you to be effective, how long you're liable to stay motivated on something. And so we put you with a guide who will walk with you for, you know, about a semester to really dig in and understand what you've been given, because it's kind of the parable of the talents. God's giving you something. He's expecting to get something out of that.
And again, we tend to celebrate the shiny, the big, and a lot of people that come to us thinks that theirs doesn't sound very exciting compared, again, to American Idol or, you know, something that they think, wow, that's a wow, and I'm not a wow. But this is God's statement, the creator's statement of purpose in this person. And so it has that inestimable value. It has unique value. If they are missing in that place, then something doesn't get done in this world. So we try to also, you know, if they're a believer, remind them that in the Gospels, the people almost always that Jesus used were not the shiny people, were not the great people of the day. They actually were very simple, but they were using a gift in a way that blessed others.
So I just want to take the last minute that we have or so and once again, give a plug. Bill, do you want to talk about the giftedness workshop that's coming up?
Yeah, because Kim, I have been told, just a rumor, but there are some people, at least one or two, that have enrolled in seminary, come to seminary, convinced God's called them and has a purpose for their life, but they don't know what they're going to do when they leave seminary.
Just a couple.
I don't know. But if that in any way describes you, or you know somebody that describes...
Like a friend. There might be a friend
right.
out there.
Who... You have a friend like that. That's why we put the Giftedness Discovery Workshop together, because we want you to have a means of not just talking about giftedness, but actually discovering what is your giftedness. And that's going to be held next week, Friday evening and half of Saturday, November 4th and 5th. And to sign up for that, you can go to our website. I guess there's a code there, right?
Yeah, it is. But you can say it out loud, too.
Yeah.
It's not that one. It's hendrickcenter.dts.edu.
Thank you. hendrickcenter.dts.edu. I just work
here. We need you, Kim.
Yeah, thanks.
And there'll be a sign-up place and all the stuff that you need to do to get ready for that workshop. There you go. And while you are there, I would invite you to click on other links on that website, because I'm here to announce today we have a new website at the Hendrick Center, and it is now open for business, as it were. And we have a lot of resources that we've developed over the years, all the way back to 1986. You know, conferences, podcasts, articles. Just a treasure trove of stuff, really valuable on leadership, on cultural engagement. And what we would like to do is make it available for you and those you know to jump around in there and see all the wonderful things we have with things about professors and, I don't know, it's a treasure trove of stuff. And you can sign up to be what we call an insider, so that you get access to material that we don't just open the door to the general public on.
Yeah, but it's free. It's all free.
Yeah, it's all free.
So, yeah. So feel free to check that out and sign up for the workshop if you are interested. And we would love to walk that part of the journey with you and to just help you figure out what God has made you to do. I'm going to go ahead and pray for us, and then we'll be dismissed. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for, Lord, just for this time, for the work of Bev and Bill, and the ministry and the impact that it has had on thousands and thousands of lives, Lord. Thank you for the reality that you have created us each individually, and I pray that our hearts would just marinate in the wonder of that, that you have made each one of us in a distinct individual way, and in some way, we image you in a way that nobody else does, and that that truth can just settle in our minds and in our hearts and quite frankly in our hands today, Lord, as we go about our work, and that we can just worship you in a deeper and more grateful way and see that the work that we're doing really does matter, and it is the work that you have to happen on this earth and for the flourishing of this earth. And we just ask that you would be with everybody the rest of the day, that you would bless their hands as they go about studying and part-time jobs and full-time jobs. And Lord, we just thank you again for this time together. In your name, amen.